Up next, we're talking money with the man responsible for fee-only financial planning in Ohio, founder of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and expert advisor to the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. It's the only financial planning show on radio, Managing to Be Wealthy, with your host, John Sestina.
Good evening. I'm John Sestina. Welcome to Managing to Be Wealthy. With me tonight, Craig Konstantinovich and Tyler Cook, both certified financial planners. How are you doing, guys?
Great, John. How are you?
I'm good. Are you you done with all your shopping for Christmas, are you?
Started. Actually, got quite a bit done yesterday. I was surprised.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm a bah humbugger, so I don't have to worry about it.
That's right.
Yep. I wrapped my nice present up with a nice pretty bow on it. Got that all taken care of myself.
Oh,
so
very good.
Yeah. Decided to go out. Now was time to get a new-to-me vehicle. So finally pulled the plug on that and drove around for a couple hours yesterday getting that all wrapped up. So now I'm driving in style, as they say.
Excellent. And hopefully people have done planning for the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
And they've saved up in advance. They're not just charging this all on their credit cards, even though the economy seems to be booming right now. Sales are way up, especially internet sales, as we know.
Right.
And that's probably not going to change. It's going to get more and more so as more people become familiar with using the internet, kind of a thing. So things are looking good for the economy with that. The GDP is looking good. The forecast are very exciting.
Yeah, was it 3.9%? Is that what they were projecting?
They are projecting that, and more than one source.
Yeah.
I mean, it's every time you hear some financial person talking, they're quoting another source, a brokerage house, or, you know, some major economic group or whatever. And they think this tax bill, however it turns out, is going to make this thing really boom.
And that's going to be a big factor here. And you start to see that for anyone that's paying attention to the stock market. Everyone says that directly correlates to people's belief as far as passing the tax reform. But in reality, you know, we're talking about ways to help out the American middle, low middle income classes here. And that's what we're really focusing on with this.
Exactly. And that's what's good. And indeed, it looks like some of the wealthy are going to pay more taxes.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to pay more taxes.
Yeah. It's keeping what we said, there's seven brackets, I think, in the latest.
Well, in the Senate's plan, yes.
Yeah, we'll get into those details.
We're going to go through that a little bit. But so we want you to plan for this tax thing, and there are some things you ought to consider, given it looks like this bill's going to pass.
Right.
And there's some things in there, like the state and local income taxes are going to be abolished, which means you won't be able to deduct them next year. So if you're filing the long form, guess what you ought to do this year?
Yeah, try to take advantage and try to prepay some of those, or again, find other ways that you can bunch those itemized deductions together.
Exactly. So do some planning. Meet with your accountant. Your accountant should be up on this sort of thing, and don't wait until January or especially April. It's too late, folks. So you want to do your planning now.
Yep.
You're meeting with a financial planner. They should be calling up ideas and discussing them with you on what you should do. I mean, take advantage of your capital gains if you can, and reduce your income tax there, and watch out for what your bracket's going to be next year. There's a lot to be done. And we're talking in the Senate plan, the home mortgage interest deduction is going to be dependent upon what, guys? $1 million limit.
Exactly.
In the House bill, it's $500,000.
So there'll have to be some kind of common ground or some kind of agreement that comes about with that.
They will. So if you have a mortgage on your house, so you have to be paying attention to that sort of thing. It does seem, though, that the both houses are allowing the property tax deductions.
And one of the latest versions I saw was up to $10,000.
Up to
right?
$10,000, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that ought to help a little bit for those folks. But I don't know about your taxes, but my house taxes are more than that. So a lot of these things I'm going to be dinged on, but I'm still in favor of the tax bill. It's not perfect.
Right.
I would have liked it to have been far more aggressive than it is. And get rid of a lot of the stuff that's out there. As you well know,
mm-hmm.
I'm in favor of the national retail sales tax and just chop it off the block and get rid of all this political nonsense that's going on. So let's go through some of this stuff. And as we do, let's offer some planning tips, if we can, on some of these things. So we just said, for example, that your property tax deductions are going to be good, it seems, up to $10,000. Well, why don't we just do a little comparison here between the two plans? And so let's start from the top here. and it talks about the state and local tax. And in both plans, what happens? In both plans, the state and local tax are not going to be deductible. So with that in mind.
And that's one thing. And to circle back to one thing maybe ahead of that, too, is the latest version of the Senate bill is saying that these tax cuts, the individual tax cuts, would expire in 2025.
Yes.
So we have a, what, eight-year window, maybe six-year window by the time it's all said and done to take advantage of this. And then it would reset to what, revert back to what today's brackets are.
Right, unless Congress does something.
Unless Congress acts and does something, which that's, you know, that's a big.
But who knows?
Yeah.
Who's going to be in power then? Idea. What is the attitude back then? What is the economy then? And so on and so forth.
But I think the bigger piece, though, John, like what you were talking about was the corporate portion, the corporate tax part of it. That cutting the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 20%, that would be permanent.
That would be permanent, and that's a big deal. I'm sure people have heard this again and again and read about it, but this should really be exciting for the economy because, yes, some of the corporations are going to use that to buy back their stock, either going to repurchase their stock, they're going to pay higher dividends, but in all, they're going to have to be spending this money. That's going to mean they're going to want to grow, and with some of the provisions in the tax bills for buying new equipment and so on and so forth, they're going to spend that money, and hopefully they're going to employ more people, and as they do, that's going to put pressure on the job market, which means what? Wages are going to go up,
right?
Which is really what we want. We want the middle class not only to save income taxes, but we want them also to make a little bit more money so they can get ahead again.
I know we're coming up on a break here, but I'd love for you to explain how corporations don't really pay tax. I don't think people really get that, right?
It always mystifies me that people even argue this case because they're always saying, oh, corporations, bad boys, and all that kind of good stuff. Now, let's just think about it logically. Oh, that's a bad word. I shouldn't use that logically. But if you're a corporation and you pay no tax, then you set a price on your product, whatever it is. But the minute you have a few dollars less because of taxes, so if all of a sudden the government says, well, give me 30 cents out of your dollar – well, if you want to be as profitable as you were before, what do you have to do?
Raise your prices.
You have to raise your prices. Well, if you raise your prices, who does that hurt?
The customer.
Of course, it hurts the consumer. So when you yell about the corporations paying corporate income tax, recognize they don't really pay tax because what they do is raise the prices on their products and the consumer ends up being stuck with the bill. So it's a non-issue as far as I'm concerned and certainly misleading when people are on top of these big bad corporations paying all those income taxes. Well, when we come back, we're going to pick up on this tax bill and compare the Senate bill to the House bill and see what we can find out and hopefully offer you some tips. In the meantime, please give us a call at 821-9886 with any questions, not only tax planning. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Tyler Cook, Craig Konstantinovich, both certified financial planners, and we're trying to get through this tax bill, I guess. It's now a bill, and they're going to go to conference, and hopefully they're going to pull something together, and it looks like there aren't too many differences, but some of the differences are significant, and we'll hit on those. But one that the Senate came up with that the House did not was the repeal of the mandate in Obamacare. Right?
Yeah, so the individual mandate is what they're talking about here. So requiring people to have health insurance, not life insurance. That's not a requirement just yet. But health insurance is something that they're pulling back on the mandate here to help out those individuals and those other people that aren't able to be covered under some kind of group coverage.
And so what that does is eliminate the tax penalty associated with not having the coverage, which, as we know, we've talked about it for years on this show, but it keeps going up and up every single year.
Exactly.
And it's in the several thousands of dollars at this point.
Well, and what you're hearing from the politicians is, oh, my goodness, all these people are now going to be without health coverage. It's voluntary that they don't want to have the health coverage. Plus, who did that bill hit the most?
The low-income earners.
Yeah. So now they don't have to pay that penalty. That's going to be extra money in their pockets, and they won't be hit with a penalty from the IRS for not having purchase this. So it's another planning idea. Be aware that don't listen too much to the politicians on either side. Just try to get your own information and follow through this thing as best you can. And by the way, if you want to call us, please do so at 821-9886. We'd love to hear from you regarding the tax proposal or any other financial planning item.
Yeah, so over the weekend here, John, something completely outside of the tax code. John, Tyler, I want both your feedback here.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So I know, putting you on the spot
here. This is a surprise question, Craig. It's not in the script.
No, nope. Hasn't been rehearsed. So I was talking with someone, and they are very much getting up on their feet. They just purchased their first home, and they're starting to look at their income, and they're starting to say, okay, well, I'm comfortable with my monthly expenses. Now I'm starting to pay myself first and focus on retirement savings. So they're looking at their income, what their employer offers, and they're eligible to participate in a 401k. So they were asking me kind of, okay, well, how much should I look to earmark or set aside for retirement savings from my income? Husband works, wife works, and they're starting to combine their household expenses and income. So I'll ask each of you guys, if you were prompted with that discussion, is there a rule of thumb or some kind of number that you would say, here's what you should target to start off and then look to increase that? Or how would you approach it?
Craig, you have to do my tools presentation all over again here. When do they make that decision, before or after they buy a house?
Unfortunately, in this case, it was after.
Well, they should be doing that before. When you are funding your retirement, and mm-hmm. Tyler, you can chime in if you want. Sure. When they are funding their retirement, they should be funding that amount, which will get them to their goal, so they can have enough when they get there. And how old are these people?
Early 30s.
Early 30s. So if they were both to fully fund their 401ks, fully fund them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he said that. Fully fund them. Then that hopefully will get them pretty close to meeting their retirement goals. You want to add anything, Tyler?
Yeah, well, it's the favorite answer, right? It depends on what that goal is, mm-hmm. right? So how much they need to save depends upon what that long-term goal is, when they want to retire, how much they want to spend, all those other factors, right? So if you ignore one of yep. those factors, you're going to ignore all of them. That's the value of planning right there. So, but maxing it out, John, that's $18,000 per person
yes,
per
I know.
Year.
Right.
And I'm sure, it's just, I think it's human nature to, okay, maybe I'll save that for a down payment, because it's something you get now, right?
Yep.
You get access to the house now, and the thing you want.
I know. Give me.
Yeah, you crowd out or forget about the longer term plan. So
you want a candy bar or a $5 bill?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Give me the candy bar.
Yeah. So it truly depends, but hopefully they're able to make those contributions to their retirement plan, whatever type of plan that is, and then still fund their other goals.
Yep. So right. Then on the opposite side too, I was also asked by a different person. So I've got about $4 million saved up for retirement. Now, she is, let's say, mid-50s. Her husband, also probably late 50s. Now, he's been a cop his entire life. So I believe he's a sergeant now, not 100% certain. She's been a teacher her entire life. So they both have pensions that are going to be coming in. So they're talking about outside wealth saved up. So their question to me again was, is that enough? And I said, to your points about the previous example, well, it depends on what you're anticipating or what you want retirement to look like, but there's other factors you may or may not have considered, like health insurance being the biggest one. But are there any other gotchas for someone in that kind of scenario that they should be aware of?
Absolutely. They should not be fully dependent on their pension plans. They need to have some other money. I just had a conversation with an individual whose son was a policeman in another state. And the son was going to hit his period of years when he was to qualify. And because of the pressure on the states where they're not able to fully fund these plans anymore, they told him that he had to work another 10 years before he would fully qualify to get his pension.
Oh, jeez.
So, we don't know. Hopefully that's never going to happen. But it could happen, and mm-hmm. so that's why in planning, you want to always have you want to diversify your resources, not just your portfolio, but your resources. You should diversify your income, and you should diversify your resources. So great, you have the pensions. Hopefully, they're going to be just what you expect them to be, but you should also have a portfolio outside of that. Tyler?
Yeah, no, hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's a couple different angles to look at it, but what's enough is different for everybody. That's why I love what we do, because what's enough for your scenario, the first scenario you talked about, is very different than the second scenario.
Exactly.
And so the plan has to be customized, you know, to meet that specific need. So good questions, though, but the truly answer is it depends on many other factors that would affect that decision and that recommendation.
Right. That's what always happens. You know, over these holidays, you guys will be going to parties. I don't go to parties, but you guys will be going to parties. And what will happen is someone will come up to you and say, oh, hey, listen, I've got $10,000. How should I invest it?
All the time, John.
It does, because it used to happen to me when I was forced to go to parties. And so I would always say the same thing. I don't know. I can't tell you, because unless I know the whole picture, I can't give you an answer that's appropriate to you. Mm-hmm. So the same thing is true here. Well, good questions, Craig. Maybe some of our callers will have some good questions like that by calling us at 821-9886. Let's see here. Let's talk next about the various tax brackets that the Senate is proposing. And you want to walk through those guys?
Yeah. Well, there's, geez, how many now? Six or seven?
Well, we're still keeping the seven. Yeah, we're still keeping the seven.
Yeah, so, it's what they're doing is basically tweaking the dollar amounts that are taxed at each rate.
Right.
So, you know, to go through all of them would be a lot. But, you know, again, these are temporary, if you want to call it that, till 2025. But Congress will probably do something before then to either make this permanent or change it. But the top tax bracket comes down a little bit, it looks like, in the Senate plan, down to 38.5%, which is down from 39.4. What is it? The current one, 39.6. Thank you. So it's down about 1% there. So not a huge difference. And the other ones are kind of consolidating. So there's more money that's going to be taxed at essentially lower rates. But they add in, the bigger change is they add in a 12% bracket where they have a 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35 and 38. It's like
there
lottery numbers.
There goes the postcard.
Right, exactly. What happened to the simplification factor?
Well, of course, the House bill only has four brackets, which is more simplified.
Right.
So that's very, very good.
So maybe they meet in the middle and we have, you know, five.
We hope so. When they come to together this next week or so, next 10 days, hopefully they'll come together on something like that. So that would be very, very well. You know, sometimes people are talking about the various deductions that may or may not have been eliminated. For example, I heard someone say that they were up there pontificating about something, and they said, and the Republicans are so awful, they've even taken away the teacher deduction for buying
school supplies.
Yep, educator expenses.
Right. But in fact, in the Senate plan, they've actually doubled the deduction that they can take. Right now, it's $250. But in the Senate plan, it's going to be $500.
Yeah.
So, but in the House plan, it is gone.
And that's, so I'm sitting here pumping my fist for the Senate bill, my wife being a teacher. I'm looking forward to that full advantage.
There you go. But, see, looking out for me. What about the country, Craig?
Well, come on. I hear you.
Holy
but
mackerel.
I mean, again, to help educate the youth with all the other things that go into it. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. I've talked to a lot of teachers. And I mean, you want to talk about they need every little bit that they can get. For that deduction to double, again, we're not talking about a huge sum of money here, but we're talking about $500 versus $250 for those people that are spending their time helping to educate people. Something that, I guess, important to the foundation of how this country is going to continue to grow, I say why not incentivize them? Let's continue to help them out.
You
there.
Know, Craig, when I was a poor kid in the hills of West Virginia, living in my coal camp as I did, mm-hmm. you know who paid for those supplies?
You did.
I did. The student. The students paid for those supplies. And the teachers weren't to supply us with Crayolas and all this other nonsense. We had to pay for that stuff. We would get a list before school started, and you'd go to the Walmart. We didn't have them back then, but you go to the store and you needed a ruler, exactly this kind of ruler, and you needed this kind, so many pencils, number two pencils, and on and on and on, and Crayolas, and if it's a 12 box, not a 9 box, and you had to have these. But we and the parents were the ones who had to pay for those things. That's a subtle shift to letting the government do it for us. Uh-oh, sorry, Craig.
Uh-oh.
It's time for a break. So when we come back, we'll pick up on some of these tax issues. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN. There goes our cash register, Craig and Tyler. Hopefully we're putting some coins in the cash registers of our clients and listeners. I'm John Sestina. This is Managing to Be Wealthy. We'd love for you to join us by calling 821-9886 with your tax questions or any other financial planning question. Speaking of financial planning teaching, Tyler, what's coming up?
Yeah, excited to announce we have another workshop that will be starting in January of next year. So that's a three-part series.
Yeah.
And it'll be starting Thursday, January 11th, continued on the 18th and 25th of January from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. That's at the same location as the previous ones, which is at the Hub on Kinney Road, basically Henderson and Kinney in Upper Arlington. And again, the point of the workshop is to teach you how to build your own financial plan and do true planning. And again, John, you mentioned earlier the tools presentation, but it's really meant to give people some takeaways and things they can implement on their own.
So I can anticipate a free steak dinner and, you know, the filet and all that when I come, right?
Yep. Glass of wine and everything.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Woo. Right. Yeah, no, I was there. I was there the last time. I'm surprised you survived after I was there.
I think it was bottled water, maybe at best. But yeah, this
no, there was coffee.
Oh, there's coffee. Okay.
Yeah, there's there coffee and bottled water.
All right. The point of it is, though, is to truly learn and you know, get your hands dirty, so to say. And it's a workbook type setting or workshop setting. And we have a workbook that goes along with it, of course, mm-hmm. to help teach and give you those takeaways. And there'll be homework involved. I mean, it's serious. It's not about, like I said, the fancy dinner. It's about learning and really helping educate yourself.
And John, I think you've said it time and time again, so hopefully I'm not incorrectly stating this, but you've always said it's important to have a financial plan. That may or may not mean that you incorporate a financial planner into your life.
That's right.
Yep.
So it's again, this is giving you the tools to build your financial plan if it's been neglected or if it's something that you want to revisit, revamp, continue to build upon as you should every single year.
This would be a good Christmas gift for all your, or Hanukkah, or anything else that you're celebrating this holiday season. This would be a good gift for the family because the price is how much?
$0 and 0 cents.
That's right.
That's why it's a super gift. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, the cost is your time, right?
Yeah,
that's
just
the only thing.
Put a reservation in there, and it doesn't cost you anything, but you and your family may benefit.
Yeah, so go to managingtobewealthy.com/classroom to learn more about that, and there's a section there where you can register. And another important point, it'll be available in person and online. All right, so both options, in person or online. Again, it's managingtobewealthy.com/classroom.
Yeah, we had pretty good luck with that online. We had to work a little bit on the microphone, but that turned out to be pretty well. I think we had more people online than we did in the facility. So
people like to learn about finances while they're in their PJs, and I can't fault them for that.
I understand. So we'd love for all of you to come. It really was terrific, even though I was there. So I may do the first one of this next go-round too, Tyler, if you guys want me.
That'd be great.
So I can
Absolutely.
Do that same presentation and get people's attention. Well, let's move on with the Oh, looks like we have a caller. Hold on. Let's see. We have a caller here, and I am blind, so I can't read who it is. But let's go on. Hello there. Welcome to Managing to Be Wealthy.
Yes, this is. If I heard you correctly, you said if the new tax form goes through, that the Obama penalty would be. Rescinded?
That's correct.
What does that mean to those who are already being penalized?
Well, it would stop next year.
Would you have to apply for that to have them stop it, or would they do it automatically?
Well, it should be automatic. It just because right now, if it's a penalty issued by the IRS.
Yeah, it's a box in your tax return that you check. Right. Which the IRS said this year they're going to start turning away tax returns that don't have that information completed before they kind of let those slide through, but so it'd be on a going forward basis, it would be eliminated.
It would just be, yeah. So is that automatic? Yes, I think it would be automatic.
So now, is that the same thing as the penalty on the Social Security? Is that what you're talking about?
No, this has nothing to do with Social Security.
Okay, because there's a penalty on Social Security if you didn't sign up at the beginning that you get penalized.
Well,
that may be Medicare.
Yeah, Medicare, you must sign up when you're 65 years old. But Social Security, you can, you should sign up when you qualify, 66 or whenever you decide. But certainly no later than 70, you should sign up for this program. But there's no penalty per se, other than the Medicare.
Oh, so the penalty is on the Medicare, not on the Obama.
Right. Now, you're not talking about the income that you would earn in addition to Social Security, are you?
No, I'm just talking about the Social Security.
Okay, great. Right.
Medicare.
Nope, so you should be good.
Okay. Well, I'm being penalized on the Social Security, and that's what I was inquiring about.
Yeah, so that, like we said, that's probably the Medicare portion of it. Because, right. again, even if you're covered under employer-provided health insurance, you still have to enroll. You may not elect to begin to receive or be eligible to receive Medicare benefits if your employer-provided plan still provides coverage for those Medicare expenses.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, I guess I'll continue paying the penalty then.
Sorry about that, but you won't have to pay the Obamacare penalty anymore.
Yep. Thanks
for calling. Boy, I love our questions. We get the best questions.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces to it. So there's different penalties with different aspects, whether it's Social Security, Medicare, Obamacare. It's alphabet soup at times with a lot of these rules and trying to keep
it
on top
sure
of
is.
It.
Sure is. And that's why they were supposed to simplify the tax laws.
The postcard, yeah, I know.
Yeah, we're going to go down to a postcard.
Yeah.
I would deal with an index card at this point.
Postcard, I'll tell you what, we'd love that, but the Senate has decided to make it a little more complex. The Senate also changed the child care credit. What did they do to that?
Yeah, so this proposal, the new credit would be $2,000 per child, which is up from the current $1,650. I'm sorry, in the current proposal. And right now, the tax credit is $1,000 per child. So it's effectively double the child tax credit. So we'll see what happens there. And there's a couple other things that they might change with eliminations of stock compensation. That's a big one for Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Right? Those lobbyists in Silicon Valley raised a fit when they talked about changing the tax status of stock options and whatnot. And there's a couple other things they're still tossing around with pass-through income. But in the few minutes we have left here with this segment, I want to go into a few planning items as far as ideas for this tax year that you could consider if you think that you would like to accelerate some of these expenses. So
let's see if we can get our caller in.
We have
one caller on the line here. Again, I can't see your name, so welcome to Managing to Be Wealthy. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Ken here. John, thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Reason I'm calling, I'm hearing about the standard deduction being generally doubled under the new tax law, whatever way that's going to work out. Normally in a tax year, you also have something called your exemption, say, for your wife and yourself and maybe a couple of kids. Will that still be going on? That's about, what, $4,000 a year or so? Do you know anything about that?
Well, they're going to do away with the exemptions and double, as you said, they're going to double the standard deduction. And the presumption is that that's going to compensate for eliminating the exemption and also eliminating for some of the other items that were normally deductible.
So the exemption of about $4,000 a year, in your opinion, is going bye-bye. It's not going to be around.
That's correct.
So basically, if you're at maybe $10,000 or $12,000 for your standard deduction, you just double that up to $20,000 or $24,000 and take it from there then. So you'll probably come out a little bit ahead then.
Yeah, you should win. They've run numbers upon numbers upon numbers. And all the ones that I've seen from all the unbiased institutions are saying that they did all kind of price level income levels, and the savings per family, I'm going to say, range from everywhere from $1,000 a year extra money to even $4,000 and $5,000 a year.
Okay, so, hey John, I thank you for your opinion. Bye bye to the exemption, but look for a way bigger. A standard deduction, and I guess this will be the last year for the exemptions if I understand the tax law. Then.
That's correct. Assuming it goes through, you're right.
Hey, thank you. Good show. Talk to you later, John.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Great caller. Okay, Tyler, I wanted to get that in before the break. You got about 1 minute if you want to get started.
Yeah, well, the planning idea, right, is to accelerate some of these itemized deductions into this tax year. So a good example, a lot of ones we talk about is property tax, right? You have a property tax, if you're paying it not through escrow, but paying it on your own twice a year, the next one's due in January. So you accelerate the January payment into December, into this month, and then bunch those expenses, Craig, as you were talking about,
yep.
Bunching those to make your total bucket of deductions bigger this year. But you got to be careful with that, and we can talk about some of those things you got to be aware of if you're using that strategy.
Yeah, we'll have to cover that when we come back. These are great questions and good ideas, and we'll pick up on some of those planning ideas when we return. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina. With me tonight, Craig Konstantinovich, Tyler Cook, both certified financial planners, And we're starting to get a lot of calls, which is great. We have one right now. Let's see. We have Scoop on the line. Scoop, welcome to Managing to Be Wealthy.
Well, thank you, John. Hey, my mother died here September 29th. She was 95. She had a great life. But and I don't know if she had any money or not, but nor they read the will. But if they don't read the will until maybe April or May and there's a payout next year, do we have to claim it this year because she died this year, or is it next year week? If you get money, if I get money, I don't know if I get money. I don't care if I get money, but do you take it in the year that they die, or do you take it in the year where they pay you out?
Well, let's start from the beginning. The there's a tax form you file, 706. It's a federal form. Ohio does not have an estate tax, so you just have to worry about the Fed. And if she has an estate of less than, they're changing
$5.5 million
right now, there would be no federal estate tax due. So hopefully you have an attorney helping you with this. And when
she had $30,000 to her name. That's why I didn't know. I didn't know if it was any big deal or not. So
It's probably not a big deal, but the way she owns stuff will make a difference as to whether or not it goes through probate. So, for example, if she had a checking savings account and your name was on it along with hers, then you have nothing to worry about. But if she had a checking account only in her name, that may have to go through probate, and there might be some small probate accounts. I remember my aunt who died, and I just couldn't believe it. It sounds like your mom. My aunt had barely anything left. I mean, she had, you know, teacups and nylon stockings and such like that. And yet her probate expense was over $5,000 because of the way the lawyers were set up. So hopefully
That's horrible. That's horrible.
Yeah, but that won't happen until it goes through the court.
Okay, when the court gets done. It's not based on when they die off, right?
That's correct.
Well, I got one more question for you. If somebody dies and they sent you a Social Security check, they go through your mother's, do you have to send that back? You know, like, if they pay, who notifies those people when somebody dies like that, you know?
Oh, believe me, they're notified instantly when someone dies.
Okay.
Again, with my aunt, I was at the bank the very next morning when it opened. She died the night before, and we were going to open a little safe deposit box we had in case there was anything in it, and we could not get into the safe deposit box because the bank had already been notified. So people are notified on that, and that would be the Social Security Administration. So I would guess that she was not alive when the check was delivered, correct?
She donated her body, so I hear it on the phone like you guys do, and no funeral. It just,
okay.
I suppose they sent a check to you. I just don't know if I have to send something back like that. You know, I mean, it goes on her checking account. Would you have to send something back? But they know, they stop it automatically, because I have a friend like that who's like 90 years old. I'm going to be her estate person, and I don't know who has cable or who are bills or I don't know anything about that kind of stuff. What do you do when that happens like that?
So that's a great point there. And one of the things that we work with a lot of clients is to create what's called a letter of instruction. What that does is it helps to outline all the different people that need to be notified when you pass. So in your example, if there is someone like that, you know, older in age, lived a long, healthy life at this point, it may be time for you to start sitting down with them and saying, maybe you should start to collect and say, okay, here's my credit card company. Here's my, utility bills, cable bills, all those different things. So that way when the time does come and you are coming in and taking care of their estate, you're able to help navigate that more effectively and not spend a lot of time sitting there spinning your wheels and trying to figure out, well, gosh, I got this bill, I got that bill, I don't know if this was paid, not paid, all those different questions.
So, exactly right. If I walk into the house, to have breakfast with her, because I do that a couple times a week, and I see her laying there on the floor, Who do I call? Like, Dad, who do I call? Who's my first call to?
I would think it would be the paramedics at that point to see if there was any hope of bringing them back. But then at the same time, it's basically carrying out what her final wishes are. So hopefully there's like a burial plot lined up, a funeral home that's already in place, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, she has those things. I didn't know who the first person called. I called the police. I have no idea. So I'm just a kid who's interested in some little lady because she don't have any parents around or kids, and I'm kind of just watching her, and I don't know who to call. I'm kind of a lost thing. So
thank goodness for you at that point.
Well, that's terrific that you're such a good neighbor. So
I pay my Social care of my mother. I feel like I got out of that deal, so I feel like I owe somebody, and I'm more than happy to do that. But I'm not too sure what I need to do if that happens. But I walk in like that and go, hey, ooh, who do I call now? You know?
No, Craig's right. Call the EMS guys and get EMS that started. Okay. You bet. Well, okay. Thank you for your call. Hope we were able to give you some ideas.
Yep. A lot of great points there. And that's one of the biggest things and the hardest things, too, is to deal with someone, you know, immediately after their passing. So there's a lot of great questions built into that. But again, from a sheer tax perspective, John, you hit the nail on the head. The state of Ohio has no estate tax. It also has no inheritance tax. And from a federal estate tax limit, you can pass right now with about $5.5 million per person and pay no federal estate tax. Exactly. So as long as you're below those limits, everything's good to go.
And one more piece on that. The speed with which the court system works, right? We know it's not fast, right? Snail's pace. So you can do some things proactively and retitle assets and add different, whether it's beneficiary designations or transfer on death provisions, but ways to streamline the process so that the money goes to the heirs quicker and doesn't get caught up in probate and have those fees like you talked about with your aunt, John.
Right. You got it.
There's a lot of ways to do that. But again, you got to have that conversation now. If you know you're an executor of a will.
Right. After the fact, it's too late.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got to have the conversation now and figure out the game plan.
Exactly right. So let's get back to in our remaining few minutes, but we'll take any more calls at 821-9886. But let's talk a few more things about those tax rates. A couple of things that are important. There's no change in the capital gain rates. I want to point that out. And let's see here. Social Security income is not affected at all. Mm-hmm. So the retirees don't have to worry about anything. One thing that was disappointing was they didn't get the carried interest guys. I don't know why they didn't do that, but I wish they had nailed them a little bit.
The hedge fund guys.
Yeah, the hedge fund guys. Because it's a small group anyway. And then the other thing is the pass-through ones, they get a 23% deduction on the pass-through income. That's fantastic.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful there to be able to have that business opportunity set up and, again, eliminate some of the taxes. But, John, I didn't mean to take away from your thunder here, but one of the big ones, we work with a lot of people that are charitably inclined here, and this, in my mind, is one of the biggest ones to take a look into. Right now, if you have highly appreciated investments, you have an opportunity, if you already plan on donating money to charities, to do that in a more tax incentive way to you. If you were to donate those highly appreciated investments today to some kind of charitable fund or a donor advised fund where that money could stay invested and you could make charitable payments throughout the course of several years, you receive the tax benefit on that today. And because you're already planning on making those charitable contributions, it's a way for you to get that structured to where you get a bigger bang for your buck today than you might once this tax code is all passed through.
And you're front loading your gifts there. But yeah, and they think right now, again, we don't know until it's all done, but right now that charitable deduction probably would be safe if they make some of these tweaks they're talking about. But yeah, other things you can accelerate. We talked about the property taxes. If you're in a state like Ohio where you have state income tax, you may be able to prepay some of that. And then you also want to keep an eye on your medical expenses. Again, right now for most people, it's about 10% of your income. So if you make 100 grand, if your adjusted gross income is 100 grand, you're not able to deduct the medical expenses until you reach $10,001.
Correct.
Right? And you can deduct just that dollar. So there's some other things you can look at, but maybe if you're thinking about having a procedure in January, maybe do it in December.
You got it. Well, there's our music warning. Well, there's lots of questions to be asked. If you want to ask one of our planners, give us a call at 614-326-3077 and arrange an appointment with one of our planners. No obligation, of course. We do ask you to complete a questionnaire in advance so we have a productive meeting and we're not just sitting there and talking in generalities. We thank you for joining us. I'm John Sestina. This is Managing to be Wealthy. You've been listening on News Radio 610 WTVN.